midweek madness from Anfield to Amsterdam as Spurs and Liverpool enter the halls of legend and Ajax and Barca make the most unfortunate cup appearances since that latte turned up on the table at Winterfell. How, who, when, why and whither? We'll be asking those questions and then talking about the final weekend of the Premier League. Title now all but sorted, of course, unless Brighton could do City in what would be the biggest upset since literally yesterday. It's the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. What are the chances of a remontada for Liverpool?
Unfortunately, without Firmino and Salah, there just isn't the attacking structure there.
Is this the classic Spurs end of season blow up? What's going to happen to them in the cauldron of the Johan Cruyff Arena?
I think Ajax will go through. I just think Ajax are an absolutely brilliant team.
Dele Alli slipped it through. Lucas Moura has scored! He just won it! Oh, what incredible drama!
And again! Hij gaat erin! Hij zit erin! Spurs scoort! Nee, het gebeurt! Het is een nachtmerrie. Het is een absolute nachtmerrie.
Well, here we are, still together, and officially now I think football has moved into flip reverse land, where it's joined this week on the Totally Football Show by Alvaro Romeo.
Hello.
Natalie Jedra's with us.
Hola.
From ESPN Brazil, from Gia. And from High Wycombe and Opta, Duncan Alexander.
Hi, James.
Alvaro, as I probably don't need to remind you, you're from TalkSport International.
Absolutely, yes.
And Spain.
Yes.
What a great time to be in this wonderful country covering the wonderful Premier League, Alvaro.
It is a great time, and it has been a great time since England made it to the World Cup semi-finals. I think that this is just another chapter of English football success in the recent 12 months. And yes, I'm very proud to be covering this, and we'll have an old English final between Liverpool and Spurs, and I cannot wait for it to happen.
Okay.
It will be in Madrid, in the Wanda Metropolitano.
It certainly will. Natalie, how long have you been covering English football?
It's my third season.
Third season.
Yes,
right.
The most exciting one by far.
Right.
Oh, it's amazing. As a neutral, you can really enjoy it. So you can imagine how much I'm really enjoying myself watching all this amazing English sides, yeah.
And you were at Anfield on
yes,
Tuesday.
Yes, I was.
Crikey. Duncan, what a time to be alive and dealing in unusual sporting statistics.
Yeah. That's the big takeaway from this week, content. But it was just mad. We were saying a bit earlier how that Vincent Kompany goal on Monday night now feels like about 2 years ago. So yeah. It's just relentless.
Yeah, two extraordinary nights of Champions League, and thank goodness they're planning to reform it.
Yeah, I mean, that is actually a genuinely quite worrying prospect, because I think what's been so good about it the last few years is the very knockout nature of it. And big clubs don't really like getting knocked out of the Champions League, and they have a lot of influence. And, you know, I hope that we don't look back on these few seasons as the kind of pinnacle of the competition. Hopefully this is the start of something that will continue.
Well, it was a midweek that reduced the hard men of soccer to tears. So how did Liverpool and Spurs do it? That's what we're asking.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Let's start with Spurs. Liverpool was amazing, Natalie, on Tuesday, but yeah. Spurs, with what would have been the last kick in the last second of the game, and the director, certainly in the UK, absolutely losing it and cutting up flash frames of everybody from, who was it, Harry Kane to Peter Walton to...
John F. Kennedy was there.
Sooty and Sweet, looking perplexed. Two incredible comebacks then, so far, this week. Spurs, remarkable because of the way it began, with Ajax actually getting the early goal, and Spurs, who hadn't actually scored in 2.5 hours of this tie, then suddenly turning it around through Lucas Moura and his final goal, the one that sends them through with literally the last, what would have been the last second of the game, a goal that was reacted to on Brazilian TV like this.
Lucas! ele não responde ao cérebro, o B responde ao coração, ao coração.
Emociona, né, Lucas?
É difícil falar. Eu sonhei muito com esse momento.
Natalie, what's going on there?
Okay, so the commentators say that it's the body is not responding anymore. It's all about the heart. And it had to be you, Lucas. And then his reaction when he sees the goal, it's like, it's hard for me to explain. I dreamt a lot with this moment ever since I was a little kid. I wanted to play Champions League and I wanted to win Champions League. And now I'm in the final. And I have the opportunity to like give this joy.
This is his reaction afterwards.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
And he's in floods of tears when he hears the commentary.
Yes, yes, yes. It was amazing.
Where did that come from, that Moura hat-trick last night? How did Spurs turn this around? Ajax had been so strong in the first half. Where did this come from?
Well, talking first about Lucas, I think he was always a very skillful player ever since he started in Brazil. But I think he really matured here in England. First in PSG, but now here in England, he reached another level of his football. And talking about the team, you see the emotion. I always thought that Spurs, they were a very emotional team. You know, they play with their heart. And I think that reflects a little bit from the manager, because he's just like that. And you see that in Liverpool and Klopp, and you see that in Spurs and Mauricio. So that really makes them an attractive team. And it's all about that.
I think this Champions League this season shows how important managers are. You know, you look Absolutely. At Klopp, you look at Pochettino, and you look at some clubs who've been struggling with managers, you know, Paris Saint-Germain, Real Madrid, Manchester United, you know, all didn't progress in the Champions League as far as they would have liked to, because of, you know, they don't have managers necessarily that are doing what they need to do.
I would like to say that even Ernesto Valverde now is under question, because Champions League defines the season of many clubs at the minute. And Barcelona, Real Madrid, the likes of Juventus, sometimes they take winning the title, the league title, as granted. And Champions League, it is what defines the season, their season from now on. So this has become a new scenario for all these clubs. And obviously there will be some consequences for those clubs that haven't won the Champions League or haven't made it to the semifinals this year, like Juventus, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern. They will have to rebuild their squads completely.
Because they only got to the semifinals. Do you know who it was who sold Lucas Moura to Spurs, by the way?
Unai Emery.
It was Unai Emery. Yeah.
Playing the long game.
Yeah, he wasn't playing him, actually. Lucas wasn't playing for his last 6 months in PSG. And wow. Then
he was always a very good player, though. I mean, the thing is that PSG tends to overfill their squads with strikers and wingers, but which is what's happening right now, for example, to Julian Draxler, a top player that doesn't play too much for PSG or where he would like to play. But Lucas, when he was playing with Lavezzi, when he was playing with Cavani or Ibra, he was probably the most skillful player around and the most fun to watch of PSG at the time, and that was 4 years ago.
Well, he's also the most recent Tottenham signing in January 2018, which is, you know, everyone knows Spurs don't sign players very often, but they might be able to this summer. Although there are only 68 days between the Champions League final and the closing of the transfer window, so to get a move on.
Absolutely. Can we have a word about, I know you want to give us a word on Pochettino, because Klopp on Tuesday, you can imagine what his team talk was like at half-time. We've got the early goal, we're on our way. But it was the exact opposite for Pochettino. How did he get them up for that second half, having gone behind? That Ziyech goal, which made it 2-0.
Yeah, he was always bold. He was always bold during the whole Champions League campaign. And you got to give that to him, because he has, of course, a group of players who really embrace his ideas. But he really knows what he's doing. Everybody knows what Pochettino wants in the pitch. And he never gave up on his ideas, on the ideas that he had for the team. So it's amazing.
I think we need to give credit to two players who've been criticised a bit recently, Dele Alli and Hugo Lloris. Lloris, yeah. I mean, a bit like Alisson the previous night, you know, made some key saves at a crucial point. And that pass from Dele Alli for Lucas's third goal was, I mean, in the 95th minute of a game, that is good.
It wasn't just in the semi-final as well that Spurs were coming from behind. Their whole Champions League campaign has been teetering on the verge of disaster from day one.
Yeah, I was going to say that, James, because the group stage wasn't easy for them. They were virtually out. They had a really difficult group stage against Barcelona, against PSV Eindhoven, which, by the way, they were a very good club. And Inter Milan, probably Inter, having finished third of that group, they were the weakest of all of them. I saw Inter in Wembley and they were terrible. So Tottenham had to liaise with that. They have to liaise with many injuries this season. Harry Kane being one of them, but Jan Vertonghen has been one of them. The loss of Moussa Dembele as well, a really important player in the team, for a ridiculous amount, 10 million. I mean, that is a very cheap sale. And it's a team of survivors. And I think that in the same way that we have to recognize the job of Hugo Lloris and Dele Alli, I think that Fernando Llorente changed the game yesterday. Okay, he may not be the favorite striker of England, neither Athletic Bilbao supporters, but yesterday he made a lot of trouble for De Ligt, because he is a player who can get the ball, all the aerial challenges, he can win them, and he brings something in the game that perhaps won't be Tottenham style moving ahead for the season, but he brings a resource and a tool that is very valid in the football games. He's a little bit the Fellaini of Spurs, and I think that he was very important for them yesterday.
Yeah, and it's good to point out that Lucas' hat-trick, all three goals happened after Llorente was playing, which means that he changed the way that Lucas was playing, because Lucas was playing as a false nine like he did in many moments of the season. And when Llorente entered the pitch, Lucas, he got a little more freedom and he had more space to do what he does best.
Yeah, it was hard to tell what formation Spurs were playing at the end of the game. They had so many forwards on by the end. I mean, one man who's under huge pressure now is Harry Kane's ankle doctor, I imagine.
Right. Although the way he sprinted on at the final whistle.
Yeah, it looked robust.
It did indeed. All sorts of scenes at that final whistle. Pochettino in tears, players in tears. Ajax, their players who immediately collapsed, almost like someone had just knifed their leader. In a reference to a popular TV drama. Ten Hag, though, he looks so composed as Pochettino came over to... My heart broke a little bit for Ajax. They've been so special throughout this tournament. That Ziyech goal was unbelievable.
Loath as I am to kind of buy into this narrative that English teams have got more character than anywhere else, because I don't think that is, you know, demonstrably true. But it is a fact that English clubs have come from two or more goals behind to win on seven occasions in Champions League history, which is four more than clubs of any other nation. Right. Four of the last five times it's happened have been English teams.
Oh, I think Italians certainly believe that English clubs have more spirit, more never-say-die mentality.
And Spanish as well.
Yeah?
Yes.
That's the view in Spain.
That's the view in Spain.
And what do they think in Brazil? Is it something that's discussed particularly or not?
No, not really. But I wanted to talk about the physicality.
Okay.
Because in the semifinals, everybody's asking what's happening, because we have two English teams in the Champions League final. And I think if you look at the Premier League, every year it's just getting more and more demanding in technical terms and especially in physical terms as well. So Ajax rested all of their players. They didn't play. And the same happened to Barcelona. They rested their players on the weekend. And even so, you have the English teams who are just so in such a high level.
Interesting, Natalie, because iPad McQuack tweeting into us this morning asking, is rest a good thing?
It can certainly be a bad thing to win the title too early. I really believe that distresses teams, and that has happened to Juventus, has happened to Barcelona in the last couple of years as well.
Bayern and Pep's first season there.
And it happens to PSG.
Mm. All right. Yes. It certainly hasn't happened to Ajax yet, because they've still got the title to settle in Holland, but absolutely extraordinary on Wednesday night. And of course, Tuesday night was similar as well. Shall we move on then to what happened right in front of your eyes, Natalie, at Anfield on Tuesday?
Join me on my journey through time. Where shall we go, sir? Ancient Egypt. Caesar's Rome. No, my kitchen about an hour ago. Told the wife her new hairstyle was a brave choice, didn't I? Ugh.
Everyone makes mistakes, but with Paddy Power's money back specials, they don't cost you as much. This weekend, get money back as a free bet if Mane scores for Liverpool against Wolves. Paddy Power, home of the money back special. Selected markets only, applies to first bet on all losing goal scorer, correct score and what odds Paddy bets on the match. Match refund £10 as a free bet. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker, and podcast platforms everywhere. This is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Tuesday, Natalie, you were at Anfield for this incredible comeback performance. Once they got that early goal, it felt like it was on the cards. Is that right?
Yes, it did. And actually, the atmosphere was very confident once, not even once the game started, because it was before that. Everybody was already chanting, and they were really believing from first minute that Liverpool could pull it off. And it was Well, I've been here for 3 years. It's my third season covering English football. And it was by far the best atmosphere I've seen in a stadium, because I've never seen a stadium that was so loud during 90 minutes. Because you have those peaks eventually, especially on Champions League nights. But it was 90 minutes of just pure noise and chants. And it was something. Well, I'm South American, so I'm used to that, because South American stadiums, they are like that. But I was impressed. I was impressed with the atmosphere at Anfield.
Okay. Let's talk about the miracle within the miracle. Divock Origi. Where did this come from? Daniel's story writing, he was the tin of rice pudding or jar of Thai curry paste at the back of the cupboard. You can't remember quite why it's still there or when you'll use it, but there it remains. I think he played 9 minutes last season for Liverpool. They loaned him out to Wolfsburg. They tried to get rid of him in the summer. And now this campaign, he's come up with the goal in the 96th minute against Everton, the goal last Saturday, which keeps Liverpool in the title race at Newcastle, and this extraordinary brace.
Well, firstly, Dan needs to start keeping his jam in the fridge. And, Origi, I think he's going to be offered a new contract because Klopp's been so impressed. That end of Anfield as well, the cop end, that Pickford scenario against Everton when he hadn't played for Liverpool for almost 18 months. And then I think obviously everyone's focused on the corner for the fourth goal and how well Trent Alexander-Arnold did. And it was brilliant. But Origi's finish was really, really good. If you look at it, the ball's in the air. He side foots it and gets it into the top corner. It was really, really impressive. And, that goal will be iconic.
Liverpool this season, just in Premier League, they have collected 16 points coming from behind. And I saw that in Champions League, unfortunately, for Barcelona's interest the other day. Liverpool is a relentless club and probably is the best club in Europe. This is an opinionated thing, but I don't think that there is any club like Liverpool at the minute that plays with the energy, the intensity. And right now, Manchester City is surviving in the league, winning 1-0 many games. And Liverpool, true, against Newcastle, they had a difficult time, but you can really tell that there is something working for them very well. And the machine is working. And Barcelona had a terrible time at Anfield because they didn't know how to liaise with the advantage, which is something very surprising considering how experienced Barcelona players are. And it is something very unsurprising considering how bad they have dealt with the home advantages lately. They beat Roma 4-1 last season, then they lost at Roma, and this season the same thing happened at Liverpool, which is inexplicable to me, but it has to be possible to explain for Barcelona's sporting director and Barcelona's president, because this summer there will have to be changes, and this loss of Barcelona will have consequences. This is probably the heaviest and hardest defeat of Barcelona since European final or Champions League final 1994 against Milan. Barcelona lost 4-0, and that time there were some consequences. Laudrup, Zubizarreta, Romario left, and I think at this time probably Valverde won't stay. It's either his resignation or the club changing managers. And a couple of players like Rakitic, for example, could be also marked forever.
How about Ousmane Dembele, who stuffed up that chance to make it 4-0 in the first leg?
Yeah, and 3 days later, he got an injury in the first minute of the Barcelona game.
From one of his teammates?
No, on his own. Yeah, he picked an injury because some say that he didn't do a proper warm-up in a Barcelona game, in the league game. It wasn't important. And that brings you again the question of how professional Dembele is. He had a personal cook for a year because he didn't know how to eat properly. And he was basically, his diet was pizzas and hamburgers. Mm-hmm. And he's a player that has had so many injuries that probably there is something to address in there. And also Philippe Coutinho, the other guy who came with the money spent or received from the Neymar transfer. Uh-huh. Coutinho and Dembélé, they were bought just to replace Neymar, and none of them have shown the quality to play for Barcelona. Well, Dembélé has shown the quality, but barely, and he's got so many injuries that it's very difficult to rely on this player for a full season. But Philippe Coutinho's last third of the season has been appalling. The other day at Anfield, it was like he didn't play, and Barcelona cannot afford to play with 10 men when Coutinho is on the pitch.
And look who Liverpool spent the money they got for Coutinho on, Alisson and Van Dijk, which has worked out pretty good.
Pretty well. For all of that, Alvaro, how was it that Barcelona and Messi went from kind of gods that walk among us 6 days before to shadows, people, looking bewildered and bamboozled as the tie just drifted away from them in that second half? How did that happen?
Yeah,
And as you say, it's the second year in a row because we saw the exact same scenes in Rome this time last year.
Yeah, I said before that it's inexplicable, but at the same time there are some key factors in there that didn't help Barcelona. Number one, the 3-0 victory at Camp Nou was absolutely deceptive. Liverpool deserved much more. Mm-hmm. Number two, Barcelona played Arturo Vidal in midfield and Philippe Coutinho in the left wing, and those are players that don't keep the ball. And in between the second and the third goal of Liverpool, there was a 30 seconds difference, which tells you that Barcelona didn't know how to keep the ball. That is the mantra of Barcelona, and that is the grammar of Barcelona, how to keep the ball. We know how to do it, and the rest of the teams cannot cope with that. Well, Barcelona doesn't do that anymore because they got a player who can do it, Artur, and he wasn't on the pitch. They had a player who could do that, Iniesta, he left. And fortunately, De Jong is coming this summer just to help the possession game again. But Barcelona has vouched the great way of playing they had for results. And this may work in La Liga, but when you go to the Champions League, you better have a proper plan. And Barcelona played defensively in Anfield. It seems that Valverde didn't learn anything from the first game because...
From Rome last year.
Yeah, but especially the first game was just a week behind. In that game, it became very clear that, especially in the resume of the second half, that Philippe Coutinho wasn't up to the challenge and Barcelona needed to have someone to help Sergi Roberto, like Semedo. And that substitution didn't come until the 60th minute in Anfield either. And I believe that Barcelona suffered a lot from that thing, that they were not defending the Henderson angle very well. And that's why I'm saying that the defeat leaves an indelible mark on Coutinho and on Valverde as well, because he didn't know how to read the game. He didn't learn anything from the first home game, and he did the changes too late.
Of course, we were too distracted, I quote, with Messi's individual performance.
Right.
But Liverpool, as you said, Alvaro, played so much better. The better team qualified, and he kept the same starting 11. I don't understand why he didn't start with Artur.
Artur, for sure, who's also shone, especially against English sides earlier in the season. But in his defence, I mean, as we heard before, none of us thought that there was any chance of Liverpool doing this, Duncan, you thought, but most people didn't give Liverpool any chance. And this was a team that had just won 3-0.
Yeah, but Valverde, he had to know. He had to know, because you can never underestimate these circumstances.
Right.
As a manager, as a Barcelona manager, as with everything that already has happened with Barcelona and in the previous Champions League. So he needed to know. He needed to make improvements.
I'm always a bit uncomfortable when teams try and win a trophy for a player. You know, the narrative this season was all, you know, let's win it for Messi. Messi right. deserves another Champions League. And you know,
he's skipped games this season specifically to be ready for the Champions
League.
Yeah,
and he still looked dangerous at Anfield. I mean, yeah. He had five shots and he created the other three shots to the other yeah. players. He was clearly a danger in the game, but, you know, everything's trying to go through him. And, you know.
The thing is that 5 years ago, Lionel Messi was the final point of Barcelona. He was the one scoring the goals. 4 years ago, he was the creator for Neymar and Suarez. Right now, he has to do everything, especially when Iniesta is no longer there and Artur doesn't play. So you're asking Messi to score the goals, to score the free kicks, to make the most of every pass he does and not to lose the ball. And I'm sorry, but in modern football, and probably in ancient football either, one player cannot do everything. And Lionel Messi has covered plenty of dysfunctional things at Barcelona, and all these dysfunctional things were very visible the other day in Anfield. I wouldn't blame on Messi, because thanks to Messi, this tire was alive by the 60th minute at Anfield the other day.
And contrast that with Liverpool, who lose Salah and Firmino, and they're able to bring in Origi and Shaqiri, who had a pretty underwhelming first half, but they still slotted into the system. They still know what they're supposed to be doing.
Let's give a little shout-out to Hendo, who's not always the most loved or appreciated of players, but played through the pain.
Yeah, he was brilliant. And if you actually think back to England's World Cup team from last year, not many of them have had good seasons this year. Kieran Trippier, Dele Alli only recently. But Henderson has been probably the best player from that bunch.
And Trent Alexander-Arnold, who's 19?
20
now, yeah.
But that, I've not seen that happen. I mean, probably you've seen things like that before, but it, with that pressure, with that crucial moment, to just think, no, you know what, I'm actually going to improvise something myself. Moment of the season for me, that.
No, a lot of character it shows from him. And I wasn't thinking that he was doing his best match I mentioned that on first half. It was like Trent, he could have been better, because when Robertson was substituted, I was like, wow, Robertson's one of the main players here today. He was doing so well, and Trent isn't in his best night, but it was like a moment of brilliance. And after the match, I was interviewing Origi, and he mentioned that it wasn't necessarily trained, but it was on their subconscious. Because responding that quickly, okay, and being always
looking for that,
aware, yeah, of everything that was happening, and that was very clear. It was very bold from Trent, and Liverpool just knew how to respond to that.
Shout out to the ball boy, Oakley Cananier, yes, who not only sounds like the must-have eyewear for the Giro d'Italia, but got the ball back really quickly to Trent, and, you know, helped that goal. I mean, something Liverpool spotted and worked on.
Oh, really?
They told the ball boys to get the ball back quickly, because Barcelona often take a while to set up set pieces.
Interesting. Benjamin Yeo says, how about a flip reverse where Alisson follows Klopp, please, in the first leg and goes up for the corner at the Camp Nou? Barcelona walked the ball into the empty net for a 4-0 win. I didn't see that. Klopp urged Alisson up, did he?
Yeah.
And Alisson said
Alisson
no.
Sort of thought about it and then didn't.
Did a Kepa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But you mentioned Hendo, who's been brilliant this season, and I think his game evolved during the season because he had more liberty and now he's more aware of his defensive side as well, besides being there for the midfielders and the forwards. But Fabinho was amazing because he got booked in the beginning of the match, and then I thought, okay, so it's over for him, because he's the guy who really is, his strong spot is like really marking and getting messy and getting all these dangerous players. And even though he was booked, he managed to control this situation, and he was very useful in that match.
Well, I believe that Fabinho is also making Henderson a better player, because Jordan Henderson believes that he's not a holding midfielder. He thinks that he's much more than that. And I think that they found the position for Jordan Henderson, which is a very good thing.
We should mention Wijnaldum as well, you know, two goals from the bench. I mean, a few people have pointed out, actually, you know, Newcastle got relegated with the midfield of Sissoko and Wijnaldum, and now they're both dominating Champions League semi-finals.
All right. So you can play a similar game with Southampton, actually, as well.
Yeah. Mm.
Liverpool have faced Spurs twice so far this season. They won both fixtures 2-1, but it means nothing now, though. All bets are off.
It means nothing, and the victory of Liverpool over Spurs in March all came down to a mistake from Hugo Lloris. But those clubs were very tight and very leveled. I could say that the 24 points difference on the table won't be showing the real difference between Tottenham and Liverpool in the Champions League final. It's never good for any club to play another compatriot club. I believe that that changes the thing a little bit, because the losing factor, losing becomes like a more of a humiliation if you do lose, because you know how it goes. I mean, every group of
it's
friends
like has a six-pointer. Like,
it is. Absolutely, it is. And I believe that Liverpool should come as a slightly favorite, because they are a better team. I mean, they've got 24 more points than the Tottenham on the table, but at the same time, that big difference won't be shown in the game.
I mean, people say Klopp can't win finals and Pochettino has never won anything. So one of those things is going to come to an end.
Be the longest extra time of
a penalty shootout that went on forever, which is theoretically possible. People forget that. It's a loophole. Talking of penalties, this fixture in the Premier League has seen more penalties than any other. And obviously this will be the first time Liverpool and Tottenham play each other with VAR looming in the background. So I suspect there's going to be some sort of VAR shenanigans in the final. One thing I did enjoy was at the peak of the Ajax-Tottenham game, Jermaine Genus said things are happening, which is both quite undescriptive but also brilliantly descriptive. And I think if there's a motto for the Champions League this season, it's things are happening.
Wonder what things will be happening on the Premier League final weekend. Or as some people call it, Natalie, Peter Crouch scores his goal day. Crouch has actually scored on the final day of six separate Premier League seasons, including both of the ones that you've been here for, the last two. Anyway, the final weekend, final appearances for Huddersfield, Fulham and Cardiff, and a bunch of players as well, like Gary Cahill and Andy Carroll, and potentially, if they can find anyone to take him, Alexis Sanchez at Man U. There's a slim chance of Arsenal catching Tottenham. There's a battle between Chelsea and Spurs for who's going to be third and who's going to be fourth. And, of course, there's the title. Now, we thought this was dead and buried, but after the week that we've just had, are we sure, Natalie, that the race is over?
I'm not saying I'm sure, but I think it's very unlikely that Man City will let it slip away. If you see Brighton against the top six,
yes,
their only win was on the second round, 3-2 against Man United at the time with yeah. Jose Mourinho. And then they had two draws, and both with Arsenal, two draws, and eight losses.
Okay.
So it doesn't look very inspiring, especially considering the consistency that Man City has been showing.
City that's won its last 13 Premier League games, scoring yes. 28 goals, conceding just three. Brighton, similarly, hasn't won since early March and has only had two goals since April. They have only lost once, Alvaro, in their last five home games against Man City in all competitions. Did you know that?
I prepare my stats and I tell you what, I think that there are statistics that can prove one thing or another or can validate every narrative. For example, the top of the table has changed 32 times this season already, which is a lot. Let's face it, James.
But I agree with people who take issue with that stat. If it's because Liverpool played on the Saturday and Man City have played on the Sunday.
That's true. But they've been chasing each other.
They have.
Relentless. And there is another stat that probably is more interesting this time. On the seven previous occasions the Premier League title has been decided on the final day, the leader at the start of the day has gone on to be the champion on each occasion. So there has not been a final twist in Premier League.
The last time it did Mickey swap Thomas. Round was Michael Thomas. It's up for grabs now. One slither of hope is City's worst ever Premier League defeat came on the final day in 2008 when they lost 8-1 at Middlesbrough under Svenger and Eriksson. Now, I don't think they'll lose 8-1 to Brighton, but you never know.
Brighton, though, and clearly I'm just saying this for the sake of saying it, but you never know. We can always clip this up for a special montage next week. Mm. Brighton have been looking... They've produced some surprising draws of late. That 0-0 away to Wolves. They had a draw with Arsenal. A draw would be enough if Liverpool could beat Wolves, which, you know, for that matter, is not a given because Wolves have already beaten Chelsea, Spurs, Arsenal and Man United
and
this
they
season.
Played well against Man City in the semi-finals of the FA Cup.
Yes, they did. And against Arsenal the other day. Mm. They played good football. Or at least they put into practice very well their plan. I would say that Chris Hutton has gone back to the basics over the last month. Bruno, for example, is playing much more than before. I mean, the captain on the pitch, Duffy and Dunk play forever. And they start by the defense first, and then they attack. And they attack very little. In fact, Glenn Murray has scored 12 goals, but the next top scorer of Brighton and Hove Albion is Shane Duffy with 5. And Brighton is the team that produces less shots of target in Premier League, which tells you that they live off capitalizing the little chances they create and they try to start by the defense in first place. And this is going to be pretty much the plan against Manchester City, I'm afraid.
It's going to be exciting to watch. All right, then, that's the title battle. Man City at Brighton, Liverpool hosting Wolves. Wolves, by the way, are guaranteed seventh place and their points tally of 57 is the most by a newly promoted side since, Duncan?
Ipswich. Who then followed that up by getting relegated the next season.
But because everyone's going, what a great season Wolves had. Ipswich got 66 points.
Yeah, they
finishing
nearly,
fifth
they
in
nearly
the
got into the Champions League.
Right.
They got into the UEFA Cup, which sort of ruined them for the next season. But one slither of hope for Liverpool in omen terms. 1975-76, they needed a result against Wolves on the last day. Trailed 1-0 with 15 minutes to go, but won 3-1. And that was also a season when they knocked Barcelona out of the semi-finals of a European competition.
Wow.
So, yeah.
There you go.
Guys, I've got a question for you because I was checking these stats. Newcastle in 1994, as a newly promoted team, got 77 points. I was too young and I lived in Spain, but how good was that Newcastle? 77 points after being promoted. It's an unbelievable feat.
Cole and Peter Beardsley were very, very good that season.
What year was this?
In 94, Newcastle. As a newly promoted club, got 77 points. Be careful with Wolverhampton Wanderers, Liverpool, because they are a team who has gotten many points against the top six. In fact, they have gotten 16 out of 11 games. Only Manchester City and Liverpool has clinched more points against the top six. So Wolverhampton can be a really dangerous opponent.
It's also the fullback slash wingback end of season conference, because we've got Robertson and Alexander-Arnold with 11 and 12 assists respectively, and then Doherty with 9 as well.
That's nice. Other exciting things to look out for this weekend. We could see a Premier League record broken. Duncan, are you across this? If there are more than 30 goals scored, then this will be the most prolific campaign of those featuring 380 matches. Exactly 30 goals would equal the record of 1,066, which was set in 11-12.
1066 and all that. The top scoring day in Premier League history actually was the sort of the final day in 1993, when there were 47 goals across 9 games.
Wow.
But in those days, they didn't respect drama, so they actually had some rearranged fixtures after that.
Yeah. Talking about goals, the golden boot is looking good for Salah.
Mm.
Yeah, because he has 22 goals, and Aguero has 20, and Aubameyang has 20, and Mane 20. But what a season for Salah, because he's been questioned so many times, and he can end up the Premier League season with the golden boot. So it really makes you think the way that he adapted during the season. He changed a little bit of the way he was playing. Klopp mentioned that a few times, that he was playing for the team, that he wasn't that he didn't have those individual performances like last year.
My perception had been that he'd still been trying, that the longer he'd gone without producing the same kind of goal numbers, the more he'd tried to produce the same kind of individual exploits as last year, but actually not.
Yeah, Klopp mentioned a few times that he was very, even in those stages where he wasn't scoring much, he was very useful to the team. He was playing for the team because he had a sequence of matches where he just wasn't scoring, but he was playing well.
Right.
So he was consistent, but in a different way, I think. Well, in
Klopp
my,
might have
in
been being nice, you know. Maybe.
But I mean, if he wins the Golden Boot, I mean, that goal away at Southampton was brilliant. Mm. The goal at home to Chelsea was one of the goals of the season.
My favourite of the season.
Was it your favourite of the season?
Yes.
There's a Son goal that I really like against Chelsea in their first defeat of the season. And obviously the Andros Townsend one.
Wow.
So I was going to mention
that's
this
true.
One.
That's
and
true.
And the Eden Hazard one against
and
West
Company.
Ham.
Yeah.
And an Arsenal team goal that Aubameyang ended up scoring against Leicester, I believe.
Yeah. That was really I mean, one if of those team, was few assists.
Yes.
If team goals count.
Well, there was also the Arsenal one at Fulham as well, when Ramsey sort of backheeled it.
Anyway, loads of good goals. As we say, it could end up being the most prolific quality and quantity. We shall see. Anyway, the fixture list for this final weekend, Burnley taking on Arsenal. If Arsenal win that, Spurs lose against Everton, and there's an 8-goal swing, then Yahoo, Arsenal get into the top four. Burnley have lost their last 9 straight games against Arsenal, by the way. Spurs have beaten Everton already this season, 6-2. Watford are playing West Ham. A win there could see West Ham move up a couple of places. Palace have Bournemouth. Fulham take on Newcastle in the Alexander Mitrovic derby. Saints are up against Huddersfield. It's their third match this season against a team starting the day bottom of the table. They've won neither of the previous two, Duncan.
Yeah, also, we all have a Huddersfield angle, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
And
our last chance to have one.
Well, as it stands, they've got the lowest goals per game rate for a team in Premier League history, 0.65, which is actually lower than Thierry Henry, Sergio Aguero and Harry Kane. So it'd be nice if they can bang in a few goals and overtake some individual men.
And the other fixture, two more fixtures. One is Leicester against Chelsea, with all sorts of talk about Hazard and that. And then there's the Ole derby, where Man United take on Cardiff, where of course he first caught United's eye as a managerial prospect. Dale Vince says, please ask Natalie why Brazilian players have names like Fred, Malcolm, Arthur, Allen and Wallace. These are the sort of names I associate with English people born in the 1930s.
Okay, to be fair, names like Malcolm and Wallace are not that common. He mentioned Fred, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Fred.
Loads
is
of Freds.
Yeah, we have a few Freds. And the other ones was
Alan and Wallace. But to be fair, these aren't names necessarily they've been given at birth. These are more nicknames, aren't they? Or
no.
These are actual.
Yeah, Alan is an actual name. Right. Wallace is an actual name. Alan is pretty common in Brazil. Yeah. Yeah, really don't know why. But okay. Yeah, we use these names.
What I find unbelievable is that sometimes in South America, and especially the Caribbean, some English names are translated quite literally, or pronounced quite literally, James Rodriguez being the most famous. But there is a Cuban name, which is US Navy, which is US Navy. US Navy, because there were many US Navy ships in Cuba at the time, and there is a name in Cuba, or there are a few people called US Navy, for instance. So some names come from the most random things you can imagine. My mother at school, my mother is a teacher, they had a guy called Kevin Cosme, which is Kevin Costner, but Hispanized. So that is something that could happen, especially in the Caribbean, yes.
Right. Wasn't Micon a Brazilianized version of Michael Douglas?
Yes. Right. Yes, that's
okay.
True.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Names, eh? Right, we've got a little bit more to tell you about in this Totally Football Show. After this, it's the Football League playoffs. We've got the playoff semis coming up in the Championship Saturday. Huge Midland derby between Aston Villa and West Brom. And Leeds away at Derby. And a little bit of backstory there, of course. It's going to be huge. They'll be talking about all of these games in the Totally Football League show with Caroline Barker. There's also fixtures from League One on Saturday and Sunday. Sunderland take on Portsmouth on Saturday in a reprise of the Checkatrade Trophy final, which went to penalties, Pompey winning that. And on the Sunday, Doncaster up against Charlton. And in League Two, excitingly, Alvaro, Newport against Mansfield. While on Friday, Tranmere will be aiming for back-to-back promotions under Mickey Mellon against Forest Green. That's the playoff news. As I say, Totally Football League show for further info. Big question here from Finnegan Gringlebury. What's likely to happen if Bolton go out of business? Would League One be a team short, or would there be an extra team promoted to the Football League and a relegation reprieve for someone? Duncan.
Well, the last time this actually happened was Maidstone United back in the early 90s, and the Football League decided to reduce the number of teams from Plan 94 to 92. So there was still a season when I think there was an odd number of teams in the fourth tier, so one team had a week off every week.
Okay. I believe that in this case, only two teams would be relegated. But as you point out, that would mean that there's a shortfall further down the tiers. Let's hope that it doesn't come to that for Bolton A, although the prospects, last I saw, not good.
That is the reverse opposite of what happened in Spain in the late 90s, when Sevilla and Celta suffered the administration relegation. And the league had the very good Salomonic idea of bringing them back to the Primera División, all together with the promoted teams from Segunda División. And La Liga had 22 teams for a season or two, which is the reverse opposite of what you're saying, guys.
Yeah. Similar in Italy, where there was a guy called Luciano Gauci who owned loads of clubs, and he successfully brought an action against the league because they'd allowed a result to stand against one of his teams, which had featured a player who wasn't supposed to be playing. And this went through court after court. And the way the league resolved it was by saying, well, listen, the other teams can come up, but you can also have the points and you can come up as well. But the division above went, well, hang on, now we've got more.
Of course.
What are we going to do? So they just promoted more teams to the top flight. And then they ran out of teams to go up to. So that's how Serie A went to 20 teams.
It was an endless loop.
Yeah.
Of gifts for everyone.
Unfortunately, the Italians, that was back in the mid-90s, and they're still with 20 teams as opposed to 18, which was a much better system. Anyway, what's happening in Spain this weekend, Alvaro?
Well, probably the most important, the most interesting thing for me, and I believe that for globally for everyone, is what Real Madrid is doing, how the casting of Zinedine Zidane is going on, because there are many players that still we don't know, is yet to be determined whether they will stay at Real Madrid next season. And the player who is getting big play time at the minute is Brahim Diaz, and Mariano, who scored a couple of goals the other day. So Brahim is definitely raising a couple of eyebrows in Madrid because he's playing good football. And aside from that, I would like to see how Camp Nou receives and welcomes Barcelona after the defeat against Liverpool. Barcelona plays Getafe. Getafe will play actually for something, because if they win, they will keep the arithmetical chances of depending on themselves to qualify for Champions League for next season.
Wow, yeah.
So Getafe will take the game very seriously, and Barcelona cannot afford to lose that game. And also, Girona could be relegated if they lose their game against Levante. Mm. Or depending on how the results go. So we could have three teams relegated by the 37th weekend of the season if Girona loses this weekend.
Okay, so you've got three more rounds to go.
We've got two more rounds.
Two more rounds.
This is the round number 37, yeah.
Oh, this one here is. Okay, yeah. Super. In France, they got three rounds to go, and there's the battle between Lyon and Saint-Étienne for third. Monaco, still at risk of going down, you know. Only 3 points from the drop. Italy, three rounds to play. A lot of excitement about the race for fourth place and possibly third, where Atalanta, who've been the story of the season, are now only 1 point behind Inter. Some suggestions that in the managerial merry-go-round, Inter will be picking up Antonio Conte next season, and Atalanta boss Giampiero Gasperini will be heading down to Roma, who are another of the top four contenders. This weekend, anyway, tens of thousands of Atalanta fans are expected to head to Genoa to watch La Dea continue their chase for third place. And, of course, they've got the Coppa Italia coming up next week, the final. We do a big golazzo all about Atalanta, they're good times and they're bad times this week, so do join us for that. It's already up with James Horncastle and Gabriele Marcotti. In Germany, just two games to play. Bayern are 4 points clear of Borussia Dortmund. RB Leipzig host Bayern this weekend. They're safe in third, and there's an almighty kind of cluster. Five teams and 3 points for fourth. Is there anything else anybody else wants to talk about?
The Chelsea transfer ban has been confirmed because FIFA hasn't rejected the Chelsea appeal. And from the Spanish perspective, this obviously may hinder a little bit Eden Hazard's move to Real Madrid, because Real Madrid is looking for a player to play in that position, especially because Gareth Bale is pretty much not featuring at all for Real Madrid at the minute. With this transfer ban, it's very likely that Granovskaya will get more difficult to deal with, because Chelsea cannot sign any player from now on until June 2020.
Interesting, because I'd always assumed, or I think that's the way it's been depicted, that it doesn't really matter what Chelsea want, Hazard wants to leave.
Yeah, that's true. But if Chelsea puts a really difficult price tag for Real Madrid,
right,
they may consider some other options as well.
Okay.
So Hazard not having any replacement until June 2020, I cannot see how that plays in favour of Real Madrid, because Chelsea will make the player more expensive.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue maybe that was why they signed Pulisic in the winter transfer window, just that's because true. They knew this was coming. It's also good news, I guess, for Chelsea players whose contracts are running out. Like David Luiz, you know, you'd think would get another year at least, because you can't sign anyone externally. So.
Yeah, no, that's true. I spoke to David Luiz last week, and he said he was very confident about his new contract. So this looks well. But about Hazard, we were pretty sure that he was going to leave after the World Cup, and he didn't. And I think there's one thing that Hazard has already shown, is that he cares about Chelsea. He likes the club. So maybe the ban, the transfer ban, will have some weight in his decision of leaving Chelsea or not. It's just, it's a factor that cannot, I don't think he's like that cold-hearted of just leaving Chelsea and whatever, you know. So maybe there's some hope for Chelsea fans that he stays after this ban.
Fingers crossed, eh, Natalie? Now let's find out some odds on some of the major footballing issues we've been discussing. Producer Ben here with Paddy Power.
Thank you very much, Jimbo. Listener, you know who's on the line. It's Lee Price. He's from Paddy Power. And Lee, we're going to talk about the odds, as we have done all season long. Now, it's far too tight to call at the top of the Premier League table, so let's go to the other end. What are the odds, please, on Huddersfield, Fulham and Cardiff all going out of the Premier League with a bang and winning their final games?
That's an almighty treble, Ben, but to be fair, you have struck gold with these before. So the price for each of the relegated teams saying goodbye to the Premier League with a win is 289-1. The longest odds there are Cardiff winning at Old Trafford. But given that United were unable to beat one of the worst teams in Premier League history last time out, perhaps it isn't so laughable after all.
Let's talk about a couple of imminent departures, question mark. Lee, is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer still going to be the Man United manager at the start of next season?
Well, Ole is at the wheel. He just can't reach the pedals, it appears. We do think, though, that he'll keep driving next season. However, there's only so many L plates Edward Wood can put up with. He's odds on to be in charge of the first day of the new season, but less convincing a price to keep his parking spot, not that one, obviously, in 2020.
And what about Eden Hazard? Another fantastic season at Chelsea. They've qualified for the Champions League. Is that enough to keep him in London?
Yeah, we think he's heading off, as is everyone in the world, it seems, apart from Pat Nevin, as he revealed to your show a few weeks ago. It's 1-6 that Hazard joins Real Madrid this summer, i.e. done deal. It's 4-1 that he stays put, which, given Chelsea's transfer uncertainty, could prove to be generous. But we don't think so. We rate him as one of the most certain transfers of the summer. Sorry, Chelsea fans.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. And, you know, stop's the word, really, in a very real sense for much of the season, although not across Europe. With this weekend, I'm off to Bratislava again tomorrow for
very nice.
The Ice Hockey World Championships, Albert. It's ever so exciting. You can, you know, hear what happens there. We have a podcast, Totally Ice Hockey, show.
I tell you what, I lived in Scandinavia for a year, and not only ice hockey is massive, but the potential audience for ice hockey is very big because Canada, United States are English-speaking countries, and Scandinavian countries are English-speaking countries as well. So good luck with that.
You know, may the best team win and all that. It's going to be exciting. Sadly, Spain are not there.
No, we're not. We're not very good at the Winter Olympics, really.
No, Italy are there. Did you know? It's quite a lineup.
I'm betting Brazil isn't in the...
No, Brazilians, Not a big sport for you. But you've got the Copa America to look forward to.
Yes, we do very much. It's huge.
When does that start, Natalie?
14th of June. Ooh. And it ends in the 7th of July.
Right.
So, and us Brazilians were kind of concerned about the form of many of our players because they haven't been like key players. We mentioned Coutinho, Neymar. Don't even get me started on
right.
that.
Right, and people talking about him being stripped to the captaincy because he's been slapping fans.
There's a real chance that happens. There's a lot of pressure on Titi, on our manager, because of that. People are arguing against Neymar being captain. So there are a few players who have struggled with injuries, like Vinicius Junior. We've had like Gabriel Jesus isn't playing much. William isn't playing much at Chelsea. They were key players in the national team. So
you've got Lucas Moura. You are well covered.
Yes. Well, we have, and he's been called up just once for Titi.
Is that right?
Yes. Yes. Only in the friendly matches in October against Saudi Arabia and Argentina, and he was called up because another player was injured.
Right.
So that's interesting, and there's an expectation of David Neres from Ajax being called up. He didn't play yesterday because of a late injury, but he did really well when he got two opportunities in the last friendly matches. So, Richarlison is doing well, and he always does well in the national team. Mm-hmm. Thiago Silva has an injury too. We don't know if he's going to be able to recover in time, a knee injury. Dani Alves might be a surprise because he's 35 already and he didn't get called up for any of the friendly matches, but he's such a strong personality and many people feel that the Brazilian team needs that now, a strong leadership. Okay. So lots to look forward to Copa
America. Absolutely. Although the Copa America doesn't have any of those kind of surprise guest teams.
They do.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. Japan is playing this season and Qatar.
And Bolton Wanderers, which is turn up.
That is remarkable. Oh, so they do, my mistake. So it's Qatar.
Qatar and Japan, as far as I remember. Yeah.
Right,
the finalists of the Asian Cup. They have been invited to the Copa America.
Brilliant.
They should do a tournament where they get all the countries from around the world to play all together.
Right.
It'd be good, I reckon.
And Qatar could host it.
Yeah.
Well, that's it then, listener. Do join us. And by us, I don't mean me, because I'll be away. But Matt Davis-Adams will be doing a much better job of it. Hosting Michael Cox, Daniel Story and James Horncastle. So strong lineup. Strong. There'll be an FA Cup final preview and all sorts of other stuff in that. So that's a must not miss appointment for you on Monday. Many thanks for now to Natalie Giedra, to Alvaro Romeo and to Duncan Alexander for being with us today. We'll catch you soon. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And don't forget to check out our other football podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts, and the downright disastrous defeats.
That's a little bit like life, really. And here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK. So that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.